This was a snafu I could never have foreseen. What do I know about being a celebrity? Zilch. He's a retired football player to me. The fans and the women and the trophies or whatever it is you get when you win the Super Bowl, those are all part of a world I don't inhabit. To me, he's just a nice guy with an easy smile and a penchant for making me smile. And the father of my child. Let's not forget that small detail. I've been spinning in circles all day, trying to determine how to handle this. To begin with, I don't want him thinking that I'm in any way sabotaging his personal life. Far be it from me to tell him what to do with his spare time. However, what concerns me even more is that if he is seeing someone, this could create trouble for him. And as a friend, it mortifies me to think I could very well be the cause. By late evening, I give up and text him. Me. We're all over the gossip sites. I hit send and hold my breath. Dane.
What are they saying?
Me. That we're together. Cringing. I'm cringing as I decide how much to tell him. Me. That you're off the market. Dane.
Okay.
His reply is immediate, as if he didn't even have to mull it over. Interesting. Me. What do you mean, okay? Doesn't it bother you? Dane.
Doesn't bother me.
Dane.
Does it bother you?
Me? Why the heck would it bother me? Me. No. Dane.
No big deal, then.
Me. No big deal? I'm perplexed. What does this mean? I don't know what this means. I don't have the decoder ring for this man language. He honestly sounds nonplussed. Dane.
Shorty, I've been dealing with this my whole life. If you're good, then I'm good.
Wow. It amazes me his ability to take the most complex situations, rife with the possibility of disaster, and reduce them to nothing of great importance. Maybe Delia was right. Maybe he's exactly what I need. Me. I love the flowers. They're beautiful. Dane.
My pleasure, Shorty. Smiley face.
Dane. I'm getting in the back of the town car I ordered for the night, on the way to Stella's apartment for our We're Pregnant celebration dinner. Truth is, it hasn't completely sunk in yet. I'm still swamped in amazement. I'm a father. Well, technically not yet, but soon enough. And it was all so easy. If we keep going like this. My cell rings and the screen lights up with my sister's name. George is having her second baby, so I never ignore her calls. After the heart-to-heart with my pops, my next call was to my sister. Let's be honest, 3 months? I couldn't wait 3 minutes. She screamed so loud in excitement, I'm surprised she didn't drop that baby right then. Georgie, how's the baby coming along? Dane. The way she says my name makes the hair on the back of my neck stand at attention. Everything's all right, I say, my body bracing for what I instinctively know isn't good news. It's Dad. He's had a heart attack. My stomach hits bottom. My pulse picks up speed. Where is he?
Oklahoma Heart Hospital in stable condition. I can't get there for a couple of days.
I've got it. Don't stress. Where's Levi?
Dallas. He's on his way.
I'll call you when I land. Love you.
Love you too. Dane.
My big sister's voice cracks. It hits me in the chest and gets a hold of my heart. You'll be fine. You know him. Tough as nails. I hang up the call as the car pulls up to Stella's building. The adrenaline rush makes me foggy. I can't recall how I got here, but I'm standing in front of her door as it swings open. Stella greets me with a smile, and I get a momentary reprieve from the anxiety that's had a stranglehold on me since the call. My father's had a heart attack. I've got to fly to Oklahoma City right now. The smile slides off her pretty face, and her blue eyes widen.
Oh my God, how is he?
Stable. My sister called me when I was on my way over. I'm sorry about tonight. I'm about to spin on my heels to leave when I hear a sharp,
I'm coming with you,
and watch Stella turning the lock on her door before I can get another word in. What? Stella. I'm stuttering, so many thoughts and feelings swirling around my head that I can't seem to get a grip on a single one. Or my voice, for that matter.
I'm coming with you,
she calmly repeats. 10 minutes later, I'm hustling her into the back of the car while I dial everyone I know. I can't manage to get a chartered jet out of Teterboro Airport to save my life. Ethan called the owners of the Gladiators, but they have their jet with them in Palm Beach. 2 fucking Super Bowl rings, countless MVP awards, millions of adoring fans, and I need to call in a favor because of a family emergency, I can't get a hold of anyone that can help. Tugging on the collar of my dress shirt, I finally give up and yank my tie off and unbutton the collar. Stella dials her cell phone as I'm getting ready to lose my shit.
Ira, I need your plane. A friend of mine needs to fly to Oklahoma City tonight. Yes, that friend. His father had a heart attack and we need...
Our eyes meet, and I swear my chest just caved in. Those big eyes hold mine. And for a fraction of a minute, I feel lightheaded, my stomach turning. Nodding, she adds,
Yeah. We're on our way to Teterboro right now. Great, thanks, Ira. I owe you. Send Esther my love.
She ends the call. Gripping the cell phone in her lap, she turns the thing over and over, the delicate curve of her throat working as she swallows. She seems nervous. She looks at me then, in the darkened back seat of the car, her full lips shape into a soft smile, and God help me if it's the most beautiful smile I've ever seen. Thank you.
You don't have to thank me.
But I want to. She shrugs and looks back at her phone.
I'm glad I could help.
All at once, it finally sinks in. We're having a baby. I'm having a baby with this woman, this incredible woman. A sigh of relief slowly hisses out.
Chapter 14. Stella. I may have acted a tad impulsively. This is new territory for me. I'm a hardcore scheduler. I've never done anything impulsive in my life. Well, until Dane happened to me. This mistake becomes glaringly obvious when we board the small plane, and I remember how much I hate to fly. Seeing as I've done it only one other time in my life, you really can't blame me. Foot tapping against the floorboard, fidgeting in my seat, I'm a live wire. Dane grabs my hand and frowns when he realizes how clammy it is. In the last 2 months, we've seamlessly slid into this quiet comfort level, where it's okay to touch each other. Or more precisely, where it's okay for him to touch me. I should be alarmed in the proprietary way he does it, openly and without hesitation. But I'm strangely not. I can't muster a bit of alarm even if I tried.
You scared?
No, I answer dishonestly. Look, I'm an analytics girl. I love me some stats. And yes, cars are more dangerous. There are solid numbers to support that. Except it all flies out the window when you're sitting in a phallus-shaped tin can propelled into the air at hyperspeed by 2 man-made engines. Emphasis on man-made. Birds can drop this thing out of the sky like a stone. So stats be damned.
Does it happen every time you fly? Or just private?
This is the first time I've flown private, and the second time in a plane altogether. When I don't get a reply to this, I glance at the big man sitting next to me. He's genuinely surprised.
Second time? Really?
Last year was the first time in my life I've ever taken a vacation, I add with a shrug. More silence and confusion.
Why?
Work. I have a lot of responsibility at work, and... Again, I glance his way. His expression intense, his attention engrossed. He deserves the truth. And... I've always been concerned with making as much money as I possibly can. I don't like spending it, and I love making it, that's why. I said that quickly. Way too quickly. As if I'm apologizing for something. Which I shouldn't be. I never understood why people see monetary pursuit as evil, something to frown upon, and yet desperately want all that money can buy. I'd like to see one parent refuse money for their child's education or their health care or dental care or the car that keeps their child safe. The list is endless. Money is a means, and to me, it's always been a means to feel safe. Besides, why go on vacation if you're not going to enjoy it, right? I would have only been worried about getting back.
But you took one last year?
Ira made me. He sent me and Delia to his beach house in St. Bart. I didn't know what to do with myself, and Delia wouldn't let me near a computer or phone. It was boring. I came back 2 days early. He blinks, processing my story.
Huh.
He finally says, and turns to look out the window. It's then I realize we're already at cruising altitude, and my hand is still safely tucked into his. 3 hours later, and I'm in Oklahoma City, dressed in a black cocktail dress and 4-inch Manolo Blahniks with no change of underwear. At the airport, I searched the gift shop for something more comfortable while Dane was getting the rental car, and came up with nothing suitable. I have no doubt we'll be spending long hours in the hospital, but walking around in an extra-extra-large men's t-shirt that says, "Spare a horse, ride a cowboy," would not have been an improvement. As soon as we step inside the hospital, Dane sees me shivering from the sub-zero air conditioning in the waiting room and takes off his suit jacket, draping it over my shoulders. Beautifully tailored to hug his big body, it hits me below the knees. I still don't know what possessed me to invite myself on this trip. Except, as he stood there in my doorway in a suit, and bless his heart, he'd tried to tame his hair, looking so unlike himself, so concerned and a bit lost, my heart leapt in my chest. It did all the speaking for me. "This is the father of your child, and he needs your support," it said. And since my heart rarely, if ever, speaks to me, I listened. Also, and this must be said, when it speaks, my heart sounds a lot like Morgan Freeman. So, as you can imagine, it's hard to ignore. Only after I boarded the small jet did I remember how much I hate flying. I look up from the screen of my cell phone and watch Dane walk toward me, his long legs eating up the shiny linoleum flooring, his broad shoulders stiff, and his mouth pressed tight in worry. I send a silent prayer to St. Anthony that this father makes a speedy recovery. As close as they are, I can imagine how he's feeling. The mere thought of losing my mother is enough to give me an anxiety attack. He holds out an open hand, palm up. Without hesitation, I reach for him and watch as my hand gets swallowed up as his long fingers, the cuticles neat and nails trimmed, gently close around mine. It's warm and dry and reassuring. It feels good. It always does. How is he? His green-gold gaze moves away. He exhales tiredly.
He's sleeping. Come on. I'll take you to the ranch. You need to eat and sleep, too.
Pulling me up, he throws a protective arm around my shoulders. Even in my 4-inch heels, my head barely hits his armpits. He's a solid wall of heat. It lulls me into leaning on him, letting him guide me down the hall as if we mean something to each other. Something that isn't stipulated in a legal document, something real. Maybe it's the hormones. Maybe. Wait, what about your father?
The doctor on duty said he's stable. Better than expected. I'm going to get you settled and come back early tomorrow.
You don't have to settle me. I'm fine. We can stay. Without breaking stride as we walk out through the emergency room sliding doors, he looks down at me and says,
"You're pregnant."
Then he takes out his cell phone and makes a call. He's worried about the baby. Right. Of course. The high I was riding only seconds ago takes a nosedive, my mood suddenly bleak. I'm such an idiot. This is a legal and moral agreement between two people who have a common goal, a single goal, to have a child, no emotional strings attached. Still, my chest feels tight.
G? Yeah, I just saw him. They gave him something to sleep. He was getting agitated, that's why. Doctor said the aspirin saved his ass. He was in town. Yeah, I know. Stubborn old goat drove himself here. I know. I don't even want to think about it. Listen, Stella's with me.
Looking down at me once again, he smiles. Then he opens the passenger side door to the rental SUV.
She wanted to come.
His eyes hold mine as I slide into the seat. Before I realize what he's up to, he cradles the phone between his massive shoulder and his ear and reaches across me to fasten my seatbelt.
Yeah, we have a lot to discuss once we get Dad home. Okay, love you too. Bye.
His elbow perched on the top of the open door, hip cocked, he watches me with a hesitant look. Something's coming. I can't imagine what, though. He rubs his jaw, already smattered with dark golden scruff, and chews on his bottom lip. This can't be good.
Still, there's something you should know.
Oh God, this sounds ominous. My body goes stiff while my short fingernails dig into the leather seats of the Expedition. His attention swings back to me, his tan brow bunching when he takes note of the frozen look of horror on my face.
It's not bad. It's... shit, it's not bad. Relax, sweetheart. Let's get you home. We can talk about it after you eat.
You expect me not to freak out when you look like someone told you to bend over? And don't call me sweetheart. A low bark of laughter surges out of him, a lazy smile swinging up one side of his mouth. His big body settles deeper into the seat as he drives out of the parking lot. Guiding the steering wheel with one hand, he pulls onto the main road. The streets are deserted, a stark contrast to Manhattan where there's activity at any given hour. The car stereo reads 1:30 a.m. in neon blue. I'm suddenly exhausted, as if the adrenaline that has been keeping me going wore off all at once. I watch Dane's lips move, like he wants to speak, but he can't seem to find the right combination of words.
Remember when I told you that I spoke to my family about you and the baby?
Oh, balls. You didn't, did you? I say, pinning him with my most disapproving glare.
I did.
He nods, side-eyeing me briefly to gauge my reaction. I'm confused. That's my reaction. I wait for him to elaborate, and when the silence stretches on past my patience threshold, I cut to the chase. Let's hear it, Dane.
I didn't explain our little arrangement.
I'm getting gray hair here, I say, rubbing my temples where a throbbing ache has been growing larger with every word that comes out of his mouth. What didn't you explain? And it's hardly little.
I told them we were dating and we got pregnant by accident.
We.
There's that we again.
but I don't allow it to distract me from the issue at hand. He deftly avoids my glare by keeping his eyes on the road ahead.
I told them you're my girlfriend.
Again, he takes a super brief glance in my direction. So his sister and father believe I'm one more notch in the infamous, great, heavy sarcasm, Dane Wilder's bedpost. Excellent. Great. Terrific. Dane.
They wouldn't understand,
he says, jumping in before I can have a well-deserved hissy fit.
My sister married her high school sweetheart for shit's sake. They still hold hands when we go out. She has delusions that I'm going to find the love of my life and ride off into the sunset.
Oh, you mean she doesn't know about the thousands of women you've slept with? His face does a funny thing. A thing that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up and take notice. What now? What's that look for?
About that,
he says, his expression pained. Oh, God, it's more than 1,000, isn't it? No, no, don't tell me. Don't say another word. I'm going to be sick. I grip the overhead handle like I'm on an airplane about to crash and burn. How am I going to explain this to my daughter if she ever finds out? The massive disappointment I'm feeling presses down on my chest. It hurts. I can't help it. It does. I guess it was an unimportant footnote before. Now that I'm officially pregnant, the wrongness of it has become startlingly clear, however.
Son. Our son.
He sounds offended. The nerve. And what a great role model for our son you'll make. His jaw looks ready to shatter, the vein between his brow pulsing. He throws me under the bus and gets mad because I point out the obvious, a fact that he was mighty proud of not so long ago. Look, it's late. Now is not the time to discuss this. We need to focus on your father, I add. He doesn't respond. 45 very silent and tense minutes later, Dane pulls the expedition down a dirt driveway, nothing but a thick curtain of night interrupted by a few post lights ahead of us. We keep driving until a house slowly starts to take shape. As we draw closer, I note that it's beautiful. River rock and wood, fine craftsmanship evident in its bones. Dane parks in front, and an old German shepherd gets up from its bed on the porch. Tail wagging, it starts to bark and whine.
Quit it, Tinkerbell, Dane shouts as he gets out.
Walking around to my side, he opens my door and reaches for me. No, you don't have to. I've got it. The rest of my protest is cut short by the fact that I'm being hauled out of my seat. My feet hit the gravel driveway, and as I struggle to disengage myself from his firm grip, he lets go and I stumble into him, my face hitting his chest hard enough that I may have bruised a cheekbone. My 4-inch heels have officially become a hazard. Without any effort, he scoops me up in his arms. I can walk, I insist, louder this time. He ignores me all the same. A few long steps and we're on the porch. The dog sniffs Dane, whining her greeting, wiggling her fat body. Tinkerbell could use a diet. Dane places me on my feet and she pokes me in the ass with her nose. I squeak in surprise. In the meantime, Dane pulls the house keys out of his pants pocket and unlocks the front door. The dog, turning in excited circles around me, almost knocking me over. Before I can topple backward, Dane's hand shoots out. Gripping my arm, he steadies me.
Stella, meet Tinker. Tinker is the only bitch allowed in the house.
For a moment, I'm not sure I heard him correctly. I process. Process some more. Maybe it's the fatigue. He did not just call me a bitch. Did he? The asshole that just called me a bitch walks into the house without a backward glance. I follow and almost trip on the beautiful area rug in the entrance. Kicking off my shoes, I march after him into an enormous, great room with a top-of-the-line open-air kitchen attached. I'm still wearing his suit jacket, the arms hanging way past my knees. Not a good look, but I'm tired and cold and way past giving a crap about appearances. He opens the refrigerator and begins taking food out, placing it neatly on the granite countertop of the massive island. Grilled chicken breasts, a couple of tomatoes, an avocado, a loaf of bread. Did you just call me a bitch?
I called Tinker a bitch,
he answers flatly, face still hidden in the double-wide stainless steel refrigerator.
Which she is in the truest definition of the word.
I glance at Tinker, who dutifully followed us in. Smiling, she wags her tail at me. Well, don't call Tinker a bitch, and definitely don't ever call me that. He whips around to face me. Across the island, he shouts,
You don't know Tinker well enough to make assumptions about her.
I flinch, shocked as all get out. One, he's never raised his voice at me. And two, what the hell is he talking about? What are you talking about? What assumptions?
Assumptions about...
I watch him struggle, his jaw working. I'm not sure whether he's trying to speak or trying to contain something. He turns his ire to the food on the counter, frowning at it.
Forget it.
It must be his father. He's worried, and blowing off steam. That has to be it. I haven't a clue what's gotten into you in the last hour, but I'm tired, and we need to focus on why we're here. His demeanor shifts, the anger retreating.
Yeah,
he says, raking his hand through his unruly hair.
You need to eat.
I'm not hungry.
You need to eat.
Dane.
Fine.
He grumbles something else I can't make out. I think I heard stubborn, but I can't be sure.
Let me show you to your room.
Down the hall, he leads me to a large bedroom with a king-sized bed. The decor is country, charming, and cozy. The sleigh bed covered with a beautiful quilt and plenty of pillows. Dane stands off to the side, leaning against the wall with his big hands shoved in the pockets of his dress pants, the swells of his chest muscles tight against his white dress shirt. He watches me with a puzzled expression, serious in a way he rarely is. At rest, his face is flawless. It impels one to stare. Most of the time, I forget how beautiful he is. And he unequivocally is. The sharp cheekbones, the firm jaw, the dip in his chin.
And that body. Dios mío.
Massive without looking bulky, powerful and proportionate. A perfect example of the golden ratio. Da Vinci would drool at the sight of this man. Our eyes meet and he looks away first, his expression uncomfortable, almost awkward. Which is strange because I've never seen him appear anything less than overly confident. Are you okay? A curt nod is all I get.
And they say women are moody and irrational. There are towels and a new toothbrush under the sink. Tomorrow we'll get you some clothes. I can give you a t-shirt to sleep in.
I have the one I bought at the gift shop. With his head down and shoulders slouched, he turns to leave. I'm really in no mood to play shrink right now. The smart thing to do would be to let him leave and leave him be. That would be the smart thing to do. Dane. Pausing, he looks over his shoulder. I don't want to fight with you. I know you're worried about your father, and I'm sorry. His warm, hazel eyes hold mine, not a word in reply. He seems on edge, frustrated, as if he's trying to tell me something I can't seem to understand.
Get some sleep.
Without pausing, he closes the door behind him. I stare at the knotted pine wood, waiting for him to walk back in and explain, to give me some insight on what's going on with him. But it ends in vain. The door stays firmly shut. A short while later, I shrug off the dress, pull out the oversized t-shirt and slip it on. Too tired to take a shower, I crawl into bed after washing my face and teeth. Tomorrow I'll try to decipher what that look on his face meant. Tomorrow.
Chapter 15. Dane. I didn't sleep a wink last night. Not that I'm a great sleeper to begin with. Last night, however, was especially painful. Staring at the ceiling for hours on end put me in a shit mood. And it's not even due to my father's heart attack. He seems to be on the mend, thank God. I called the hospital at 4:30 this morning and heard him arguing with the nurse about his catheter. I pity the poor woman. No, I didn't sleep a wink because of a small woman with big blue-green eyes. I know I shouldn't be mad at her. Hell, I'm the one that embellished the number of women I've slept with in the past. The fact that she believes it is what pissed me off enough to keep me up all night. I don't sleep around. Damn it, she should know me well enough by now. I'm not saying I'm a saint. At one time I did. I'll own up, in my 20s when I was first drafted. But not now. Not for a long time. Not after I hit 30 and realized I needed rest and recovery more than I needed to get off inside a stranger that didn't care that I needed to be careful with my body, that I couldn't take even the smallest risk with my knees or my shoulders. Not after the ACL and MCL tear, and the fear that I may never play again. Fact is, I haven't gotten laid since I met her. I had to choke the chicken once last night and twice this morning already. I've jerked off more in the last 3 months than I did at 16. I saw more action then than I do now, that's for damn sure. Which is probably another reason I couldn't sleep last night. For the sake of my mental health, I should probably remedy that right quick. Except, and this is the troublesome part, my dick has developed a preference for the woman sleeping on the other side of the house. The thought of being with anyone else makes him shrivel and hide. And that ain't like him. Cracking open the door of her bedroom, I find her fast asleep. Figures. She's not worked up in a lather over me. I'm probably the last man on the planet she'd be attracted to. Does it bother me that she's more concerned with what our child will think a decade and a half into the future than she is about me keeping company with other women? Yeah, it sure as shit does. It bothers me that Stella doesn't care who I'm sleeping with as long as it isn't her. I step into the bedroom and she sits up in bed, catching me by surprise. Her hair is piled up and hanging off to the side. Hair a mess, no makeup, and no designer suits. She's the prettiest woman I've ever seen. Eyes barely cracked open, she takes me in. It doesn't take long for her to zero in on the tray with food I'm holding.
Hey.
Her voice is scratchy, deeper than usual. The kind of voice that welcomes a lover. My dick starts to swell and I bite down on the inside of my cheek to distract myself. A damn nuisance. Hey, I echo back. All I can do is hope the tray is hot in the wood pushing against my sweatpants. I walk over to her side of the bed and place the tray on the nightstand. She scoots over, making room for me, and I sit on the edge. I'm headed to the hospital.
You made breakfast.
You didn't eat last night. She takes inventory of the food. Her stomach growls loudly, and we both smile. Just in time.
I didn't know you could cook. This looks delicious.
The smile slides off her face, her color turning pale.
Except, I'm nauseous.
We're pregnant. It hits me sideways, knocking me off balance a little. With all that's happened with my father, the baby got lost in the chaos.
Dane?
Can I do anything? Get anything to feel better? Have you thrown up?
No,
she tells me with a small smile. Almost immediately it turns into a frown, her hand moving to cover her stomach.
Maybe the toast will help.
She grabs a slice off the tray.
I don't want to hold you up. I'll take a cab to the hospital as soon as I shower.
She grimaces, chewing slowly. My eyes stray down her t-shirt over the swells of her breasts and stop. Holy hell, her nipples are pointing through the lettering. All the blood in my brain rushes to my dick. I'm so distracted by those gorgeous nipples it takes me a while to process what the t-shirt says. Save a horse, ride a cowboy. That does it. No chance she doesn't notice my dick pointing at her like a fucking compass. I'm so hard it's painful. Nice t-shirt, I mutter. Stuffing the last of the toast in her mouth, she crosses her arms in front.
It's the only one they had in a large size.
Two bright pink spots form on her overstuffed cheeks, and I almost kiss her right then and there. As soon as the impulse hits me, I start to panic. I gotta go. Levi will drive you when you're ready. She swallows.
Who's Levi?
She asks, grabbing another piece of toast off the tray. My brother.
You have a brother?
She shouts, probably shocked her research missed this news. Her expression makes me smile. I can always count on her to do that. From another mother. Long story. He lives here, helps manage the ranch, trains the cutting horses.
I don't want to be a burden. If he's busy...
Eat your breakfast, I say, interrupting another debate. Never met a more stubborn woman. I'll see you later.
Fine,
she mumbles around another mouthful of toast. I get up to leave, turning away so she can't see my dick pointing in her direction.
Dane?
Her small hand is on my forearm, slender fingers wrapped around the sleeve of my shirt, and the first thing that comes to mind is that I like it there. It belongs. I wasn't sure what to think when she volunteered to come with me. Stella is strictly city, by her own admission. I was expecting awkward. I was expecting her to be as structured here as she is at home. But I guess that's been slowly changing too. And seeing her here in this bed, all sleepy-eyed and relaxed, there's nothing weird about it. She fits. Yeah, I murmur after clearing my throat. My eyes slide back up to her face. She smiles, her focus bouncing between me and the rest of the food on the tray.
This is really nice of you. Thank you.
I dare not speak. All I can muster is a nod because I am one bad decision away from closing the distance between us, sinking my hands into that thick brown hair of hers and planting one on her. And she doesn't have a clue because if she did, she'd probably be on the next flight to New York. I gotta go. See you later. I need to get out of here before I do something real stupid. This isn't a romantic getaway. In spite of what I told my father and sister, she isn't my girlfriend. She's the mother of my child. Nothing more. I need to remember that before I ruin everything by developing feelings. But damn, I'm feeling something.
Stella. Oklahoma is flat. At least this part of Oklahoma is. Not in a boring, there's nothing to look at way. It's flat in a romantic, moody way. It's minimalist. The horizon stretching without interruption as far as the eye can see. The complete opposite of New York, where every square inch is a visual tapestry of odd shapes and loud colors, not to mention the noise pollution. The color of the sky here is sharper, too. Deeper. The white puffs of cumulus clouds drawn distinctly. They look like they're in high definition. The land is softly rolling in yellow. A few scattered iron horses stand alone in the distance, most of them stationary, some bobbing for black gold. I was expecting more of those. How long have you worked for the Wilders? Tearing my eyes away from the raw beauty outside my window, I turn to the raw beauty sitting in the driver's seat of the pickup truck. I mean, seriously? There's got to be something in the water here. Levi West is flat out gorgeous. As in rubbernecking, walk into moving traffic because you're staring gorgeous. He's all perfect angles, high cheekbones, full lips, A deep olive tan which offsets his bright, bottle-green eyes, brown hair with the tips blonde from working in the sun. Not as pretty as Dane's, the devil in me says. Or maybe just the stupid in me. I almost choked on the dry toast when I spotted the massive erection he was waving around earlier. My lungs seized, literally stopped working for a full 60 seconds while the rest of me went up in flames. That's the only reason I was saved from a coughing fit. All this at the mere sight of it. Which probably had nothing to do with me in the first place, and everything to do with the man's natural state of being. No doubt he noticed the bead of sweat on my forehead, along with other attention-seeking body parts. Moment of truth? I've never been particularly driven in that regard. Sex is nice and all, but given the choice of a great book and a pint of ice cream or sex, bah, it's a tough call. Except, lately, that's all I think about. All I think about. Like I've suddenly turned into a teenage boy, or a sex-starved 33-year-old woman. And those dirty, dirty thoughts I hadn't known I had in me happened to be about one man in particular.
Since I was 15, about a dozen years.
Levi's smooth voice interrupts the aimless wandering of my filthy mind. Incidentally, it was never filthy before. It was squeaky clean, a fact I was proud of. Alas, no more. 15? His answer finally catches up with me. Aren't there laws against that? What did your parents say?
I don't know my father, and my mother was in jail. I was living on the streets when I met Dane.
He says it so casually it takes me a moment to accept that he's given me an honest answer. And when I do, my head whips around to take a better look at the man sitting in the driver's seat. Posture relaxed, lazy smile in place. A genuine one. There's no pain in the story he tells. My chest hurts, though. Jesus, does my chest hurt. I need to know more. Tact be damned. How'd you guys meet? He side-eyes me briefly, a broad white smile lighting up his face. Have mercy on the female population.
He caught me trying to boost his pickup outside a Dallas nightclub.
This story keeps getting more interesting by the letter. I swivel in my seat to face him, eager for every scrap he's willing to give me. Did he have you arrested?
No, ma'am,
is his quick reply, his drawl as thick and slow as maple syrup.
He brought me here, gave me a place to live, and offered me a job.
He kidnapped you? I must have misunderstood.
He didn't give me much choice.
Levi chuckles softly. Going by his expression, he's caught up in the memory.
It was either go with him, or he'd call the cops.
Dane is easily 3 inches taller than Levi, and although Levi has plenty of muscle now, he doesn't even begin to compare to Dane. At 15, without proper nutrition, Levi must have been all bones. Weren't you scared? His smile falters. The pause carries weight. When his eyes meet mine again, there's wisdom in them, evidence of things he's experienced. Unpleasant things. I could swear the vivid green dims a little.
I was always scared back then, so it didn't make much difference.
I imagine the worst. I don't press for more details because I can't handle the details. My throat clogs. My eyes well up. Swallowing repeatedly doesn't help. I turn away and brush the corners with the knuckle of my index finger, but it does little good. There's more where that came from.
Bill taught me everything he knew about horses and made me go to school.
Out the passenger side window, the stark horizon stares back at me. A tear manages to break free, streaking down my cheek. It's the hormones, I tell myself. It must be. They sound like good people. My voice falling apart, it's barely audible by the end.
The best.
15 minutes later, he parks the pickup truck in the hospital lot. Levi walks next to me, curbing his long stride while I teeter precariously on my heels, since I'm still stuck in the clothes I wore here. Once we reach the ICU, he leaves me to talk to a nurse who informs him that Mr. Wilder has been moved to a regular room 2 floors below. Great news. His condition has improved. The heart attack doesn't seem to have caused any major damage. Steps away from Mr. Wilder's new room, Dane's voice spills out into the hallway, as much as he tries to temper the volume, and I can tell he's trying.
No, Dad, yes, she's here, but I don't want you getting any ideas. No, we're together, but don't even bring that up in front of her. No, 'cause I said so.
Levi's expression turns curious.
Give me a minute and I'll let them know you're here.
With that, he enters the room, leaving me standing alone. A beat later, Dane steps out. His gaze openly moves from my feet to my face.
Hi,
he says with a jaunty smile. Hi, I reply. It sounds like a question because it is. Is everything all right? I don't know what he was talking to his father about, but I suspect it has to do with this ruse he's concocted. Stepping into the hallway, he takes my wrist and leads me away, or rather yanks me away without pausing to explain. In 3 of his long-legged strides, we're halfway down the hall, out of earshot, with me shuffling after him as fast as I can on those life-threatening heels.
The heart attack was mild. It didn't damage his heart. They're going to keep him here another 2 nights, though, as a precaution. He's already doing better than expected.
Thank God, I respond, my hand automatically falling over my heart, and breathe a sigh of relief. I know how close they are and how worried Dane was without having to be told.
But?
But what? Judging by his demeanor, whatever it is, it's clearly serious.
We can't stress him out.
After which he gives me a sharp look. We? I return. How could I possibly stress him out?
He's got it in his head that we're together.
That's because you put it there. Hands resting on his lean hips, he blows out a deep breath.
Stella?
It's a murmur, a question, and an argument all rolled into one. It's the anxious need I hear in his voice, however, that convinces me he's not fooling around. In no way, shape, or form do I want to be the one to stress out this man who will be the only grandfather my child will ever know. What do you need from me?
Act like we're together.
At my stony countenance, he continues,
it's just for a few days.
Fine. But I hate lying. Put that on the record. I stab his chest to underscore my point, and he automatically curls his fingers around mine. They're strong and calloused, and for a moment, my mind knows nothing else outside of that feeling, that connection between us. In a daze, my gaze climbs back up and finds him wearing a subtle smile.
Will do,
he replies. His voice is quiet, the rasp more pronounced. Something weird is happening between us. Self-preservation tells me to push it away, to force it to the back of my mind where I don't have to look at it. I detest it, so don't ever do it. To me, or to our kid. I murmur, trapped by the sultry gaze looking down at me. Sultry? WTF? Taking my finger, he slowly draws a cross over his heart.
Cross my heart, hope to die.
His smile grows into an all-out grin. Thankfully, it knocks some sense back into me. Dane, I grind out, yanking my finger out of his gentle grip.
I hear you. No lying. Ever. I promise. Can we go in? He's been chewing my ear off all morning about meeting you.
We walk up to the doorway and I'm suddenly nervous. This is his father, after all. A man that will be a permanent part of my child's life. And mine, for that matter. And I want to make a good impression. And I'm wearing a wrinkled black cocktail dress and fuck-me heels before noon. God's honest truth, that's what they are. And to pretend otherwise would be a lie. Sensing my hesitation, Dane takes my hand and pulls me into the room. Mr. Wilder is sitting up in bed, finger-combing his silver hair. The gesture tugs at my heart. Mr. Wilder is a big man, dwarfing the bed in comparison. And handsome. He has a silver goatee that I wouldn't find appealing on anyone other than him. For whatever reason, it suits him. He spots me and smiles. The smile is broad and bright and reminds me so much of his son's smile that I stare a little too long.
Stella?
I hear Dane say. This snaps me out of my musings. Forcing on a smile of my own, I make my way over to Mr. Wilder's bed with an outstretched hand. So nice to meet you, The rest of my greeting is cut short as Mr. Wilder takes my hand and hauls me in for a hug. I'm engulfed in a solid wall of muscle, warmth, and a faint whiff of disinfectant.
Call me Bill. It's good to meet you, Stella. How do you feel?
His voice is deep and gravelly and oddly comforting. Releasing me, he looks me over. I pull away and smooth my hands down my dress, suddenly feeling as shy and awkward as the girl I was at 12. Something about this man gets to me. It's his warmth, I determine. He exudes warmth. I feel fine. And then I remember why we're here. But how do you feel?
Oh, I feel great.
He answers with a big smile. Yeah, right. I know the type. Stoic in the face of anything and everything. He could have a limb hanging off, and he'd ask for some twine and glue.
Even better now that you three are here. You don't know how sorry I am,
Levi says from somewhere behind me. I glance backward and find him perched on the arm of a chair, with his arms crossed over his chest, the bulge of his biceps stressing his plaid shirt. It's obvious Levi feels terrible for not being here for Mr. Wilder. Knowing their history, it makes sense. These two are close. Maybe even as close as father and son.
You've got a life to live, son. Stop apologizing for it.
Although Mr. Wilder's tone is stern, the chiding is delivered with a gentle touch. Something tells me nothing anyone could say would alleviate the guilt Levi's feeling.
Georgia is getting an afternoon flight out of San Diego,
Dane informs him.
You call your sister and tell her that if she doesn't stay home, my blood pressure is going to go through the goddamn roof. Besides, you two don't have to hurry back to New York, do you?
Mr. Wilder's dark blue eyes skip between me and Dane. When neither one of us makes a peep, he continues,
It wouldn't kill you to stick around for a while. Yeah, we can stay,
Dane answers, the words unsure and drawn out. Dane's blank stare carefully glides to me, and I return a smile that stays up by sheer force of will. I feel a large, warm hand take mine and look down to find him lacing his fingers between mine. His sun-burnished, mine pale. We're polar opposites in every way. We'd love to stay, I add. Let the charade begin. Bill claps his hands together and rubs, a gesture I've seen his son perform many times.
Glad that's settled. Now, get me the hell out of here.
Chapter 16. Stella.
No, Pops. No, don't.
Dane says into his cell phone. Glancing down at me, he shakes his head and rubs his temple. I bite back a smile. Mr. Wilder was not happy to be told he had to stay at the hospital two more nights. I know what a stubborn parent sounds like, and I can foresee Dane getting many angry phone calls between now and the moment Mr. Wilder gets picked up. Last night was weird. Shortly after the dinner I cooked, the fricasse de pollo, a classic Cuban chicken stew my mother taught me how to make, one of only a few things I can make outside of the basics, we settled in the enormous den to watch a movie, both of us acting like this is common practice, when we both know it isn't. The minute I returned from the bathroom and sat on the couch next to him, Dane decided that it was the perfect time for a workout. Alone, and quite frankly a little lonely, I called Delia and got voicemail. Turns out it was a date night. After that, I went to bed. First order of business today is getting me some clothes and a flat iron. Although I managed to coerce my hair back in a ponytail this morning, it's already getting puffy and curling around my hairline. Dane opens the doors to Dillard's, and we both enter, his hand on the small of my back, his steady presence next to me. I'm ashamed to say I bask in it. Revel in it, even. Which only ends up depressing me because at least before I had no idea what I was missing.
I know the food isn't okay, but...
He tells his father. Trying to pacify Mr. Wilder is beginning to seem an impossible task, and to Dane's credit, he's been having this conversation since the crack of dawn and hasn't lost his temper once. Side note, it hasn't escaped my notice that witnessing how patient he is with his father means he'll be patient with our child. I grasp onto this discovery with both hands and hold it close to my heart.
No, you're not. And if you give me one more minute of grief, Stella and I are getting on the next flight back to New York. That's what I thought. Okay. We'll see you in a couple of hours. Yep.
I stand corrected. Ending the call, he exhales tiredly.
Don't look at me like that.
That was a bit harsh, don't you think?
He was seconds from running out of there bare-assed. I had to steal his clothes last night because I knew what was coming.
Oh, is all I can say, a smile overtaking my face.
Let's get you some clothes.
Shopping is a chore for me, and a total waste of time. I'm not a happy shopper. I want to walk into a store, find what I need, and leave as quickly as possible, preferably without having to try anything on. That's the reason I have my personal shopper at Armani send me two styles of suits every season. No thinking required is how I want to get ready for work in the morning. Dane is the complete opposite. If this ESPN thing doesn't work out, he should go into personal shopping as a second career.
Try these on.
He hands me a pair of dark skinny jeans and a white silk blouse with long sleeves through the crack of the dressing room door. I don't know what's more disturbing. The fact that you, a man that always wears worn-out jeans and never, ever combs his hair, is giving me fashion advice, or that I actually like what you picked out. I pull on the jeans and throw on the blouse. Perfect. They fit perfectly.
Darling, just because I don't primp like a show pony doesn't mean I don't know what looks good on a woman.
At the mention of other women, I deflate instantly. Of course he knows what looks good on a woman. Who knows how many he's undressed? My mood tumbles down a bottomless, dark hole. I step out of the stall wearing that mood as well as the new clothes.
What's wrong?
Avoiding his searching gaze, I walk past him. Nothing, and I told you not to call me that. I say a touch too sharply. I couldn't care less whether he noticed or not at this point. I snap the tags off the jeans and shirt and stuff my dress under my arm.
Hey.
I'm going to pay. On the way to the cash register, I swipe two pairs of black leggings and a hooded sweatshirt off a display without even bothering to check prices or sizes. By the time I reach the counter to pay, I notice the sweatshirt has princess scrawled in pink rhinestones on the back. Normally, I'd gouge out my eyes with a spoon before wearing such a thing. With Dane on my heels, however, I don't have the luxury of time to switch it with something less repulsive.
Let me get it,
he says, standing much too close for my comfort. It's downright suffocating. Not a chance, darling, I drawl, giving him a dose of his own medicine. I hand the youngish sales lady my tags and bury my gaze inside my purse in search of my wallet. When I look up, I find a loopy smile on her face, and it's directed at him. The happy bastard smiles right back. Are you two done? Can I pay for these, or would you like to go on a date before you ring me up? They both turn to stare. She's cherry red and pushing all the wrong buttons on the register, while Dane's busy scowling at me. I hand her my credit card without taking my eyes off of him.
Did I do something to you, Stella?
The thing is, I'm not mad at him. I'm mad at myself. I cannot believe that I allowed myself to fall under his spell. I don't blame the sales girl either. She never stood a chance under the magnetic force that is Dane Wilder. I fell for it, and I've been vaccinated against this particular virulent disease. I have Paul Donovan to thank for that. Turning back to the salesperson, I take the receipt she hands me. I'm sorry, I murmur. Hormones, they're wreaking havoc. Oh, I get the same way when I get my period, she replies in the sweetest drawl. Thanks for your help, I tell her in an apologetic tone. With that, I walk away from the counter and the two of them. A second later, a big hand grabs a hold of my upper arm. I stop and turn, my expression not a happy one.
You didn't answer me.
No, Dane. You did nothing. Like I said, it's the hormones. He looks pensive, his sexy lips pursed as he's mulling this over.
We should get you some ice cream.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry. He genuinely thinks ice cream is the solution to our problem.
Then again, he doesn't have a problem. I'm the one with the urge. I'm the one with the craving. Unless ice cream comes in a flavor called Sweaty Sex with Dane, I don't want it.
And about as smart as jumping out of a plane with no parachute. The ride will be fast and thrilling and most certainly prove painful when I hit bottom. What does ice cream have to do with it?
Maybe it'll make you nicer. You know, take the edge off.
My eyes automatically narrow. Maybe we need to give each other space.
No.
He huffs, arms crossed in front of his broad chest, his shirt straining against the swell of his pecs, expression locked in the determined position. No?
No. No space. I see what you're doing here. This is some kind of female mental jiu-jitsu. You say you want space, but you don't really want it.
I'm seconds from punching him in the nutsack, which is almost directly in my line of sight. There is something to be said about being short, or for him being grotesquely tall. I can't. I flee to the cosmetics department in search of the Holy Grail, a flat iron, before I do or say something I'll regret. And find one. Thank the Lord. This goes a small way to propping up my mood. I'm almost tempted to purchase two. My hair is not something to be trifled with.
What is that?
A deep, masculine voice cuts into my decision-making. I look up and find him hanging over my shoulder. It's a flat iron.
For what?
Dane reaches for one on the display case. As he inspects